in a world where politics is all about the fighting.
I watch a George Will or a Charles Krauthammer. You know, I watched them for years. They're losers. They're just losers.
Piers, you also have to... Have you ever fired a weapon?
So that young man should have shot those people.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if someone had...
WCHL cuts through to the heart of the matter. It's time for I'll Grant You That. Reasoned, calm, thoughtful, with your host, Berkeley Grimble.
Good afternoon. This is Berkeley Grimble, your host of I'll Grant You That, a show about politics with the goal to sit down across the aisle with the two sides and hopefully come to moments where one or the other will say, I'll grant you that. We have a special show today because my friend Pierce Godwin is here in the studio. Pierce has an organization called Listen First, which he is going to explain, and he's also going to be the mediator here in our discussion. So, Pierce, I'm going to hand it over to you.
All right, Berkeley, thank you so much for having me back on the show. It's an honor to be here. As Berkeley mentioned, I'm founder of Listen First Project, and it's a global nonprofit advocacy group that facilitates greater understanding, respect, and cooperation by encouraging the timeless, but it often seems abandoned practice of listening to each other, especially to those with whom we disagree. Now, while we should all never agree on everything, and compromise isn't always going to be the answer, you know, we do hope that we can gain a newfound respect and appreciation for the other side, that we can bring civility back to public discourse. This year, in 2016, we're renewing the Listen First, Vote Second campaign, and we're tackling there the most salient case of our failure to listen to each other, as Berkeley mentioned, that being politics. But today, we have a special opportunity to have a Listen First conversation on LGBT rights and religious freedom. Now, just to set the stage a little bit before we get into it, national public sentiment on gay marriage and other LGBT issues has moved from rejection towards acceptance at an unprecedented rate. In 1996, not that long ago, only 27% of Americans favored gay marriage, according to the Gallup poll. Today, more than double that share, 60% are in favor. The tipping point to majority support for gay marriage specifically was crossed in 2010. Generational turnover, as well as people of all ages becoming more accepting of gay marriage, explains that dramatic and ongoing shift in public opinion. Now, in 2016, with the Supreme Court having made gay marriage legal across the country last year, the issue has evolved to matters of religious freedom and transgender rights, embodying a conflict between differing moral codes and worldviews. Personal lives and beliefs have unfortunately been wrapped up in a culture war. I wrote an op-ed from Africa in 2013 on our need for tolerance and understanding in this discussion. You can find that at listenfirstproject.org. But today I've got the pleasure, thanks to Berkeley, and I'll grant you that, of bringing together two gentlemen who have two different perspectives on the issue, yet they've agreed to sit down for a Listen First conversation. Berkeley and Grant, thanks so much for doing this. Berkeley Grimble, you know well, is your host of I'll Grant You That, and he's a supporter of LGBT rights. Grant Fitzgerald is a recent UNC graduate who is concerned about the religious freedom implications of LGBT rights. I'm going to get the conversation going, but then I'm just going to ask Berkeley and Grant to engage each other directly with questions of their own. Promises to be a rich experience for all of us, especially for the listeners. So Grant and Berkeley have agreed to honor our Listen First conversation guidelines. You can find those in full at listenfirstproject.org, but just a few highlights to get us on the same page. Grant and Berkeley are going to listen as they want to be listened to. Fully listen to and consider the other's views before sharing their own. Prioritize respect and understanding. One person will speak at a time. Maintain a calm and respectful tone as well as volume. You can see a tremendous essay that Berkeley wrote for Listen First Project called Don't Raise Your Voice, and that's the idea. And finally, we're going to ask thoughtful and respectful questions. So for starters, just want to get each of your broad positions on the table. We'll start with you, Berkeley. What are your thoughts on LGBT rights and religious freedom, and what drives your personal interest in the issue?
Well, I have many, many LGBT friends and relatives, and I've watched them go through their lives, obviously without having the same general rights and protections that the rest of us have. So that's why I think that they deserve the same protections that everybody else gets in this country. That would be my core reason.
Great. And then, Grant, how about for you? What are your thoughts on LGBT rights and religious freedom, and what drives your personal interest in the issue?
Well, really, it's just as a citizen. I went to UNC as well, just a little background. So, two UNC grads, and for those of you listening, Pierce is a Duke grad. I think this is a subject that's gotten a lot of public attention. I think there is a lot of passion on each side, I guess I would say. And just as a citizen, I'm very concerned about sort of the level of discourse. And I think so many times people on each side of the issue tend to talk past each other and not find common ground on issues and listen to each other and sort of listen with compassion and empathy and sort of recognize where the other person's coming from.
Terrific. Well, why don't we just dive into the conversation and you know, talk about some of the experiences that you've each had with folks on the two sides of the issue, maybe some questions that you have for each other with this unique opportunity we have here to gain that understanding from someone with a differing perspective who's willing to sit down and talk about it. So go ahead, Berkeley.
Yeah, so, Grant, is your objection, or do you have an objection to LGBT rights in principle?
No, certainly not. And it's almost, that's sort of a tough question to ask, right? Because if you say, are you opposed to rights? Nobody in general is opposed to anybody, you know, being denied any sort of right. A right is a right. You have a right to something. It's not something that can technically be denied, although sometimes we know that does happen. I think this discussion sort of centers around what sort of rights are we expanding protections and rights to a new population of people, being the LGBT community, and is the expansion of those rights or protections or whatever you want to call them, is that the morally right or the ethically right, or is it just beneficial to society in general? And I think it's, you know, my views are, I think so many times you get sort of characterized, right? And the two sides, you get a caricature of each side, and one side is the Westboro Baptist Church and the other side is the, you know, the Gay Pride Parade. And really there's nuances to this discussion. And I think that's important to note.
Well, particularly in light of HB2, which has put North Carolina on the map in, I think, a most unpleasant way. What are your thoughts on HB2?
In general, I support the basis of the law. I think, you know, it's such a difficult law because there's two sides of it, right? It's been labeled the bathroom law, but as people have noted, that there's another side to it that extends out to employment discrimination and things of that nature, your right to sue in court if you believe you've been fired for things like gender identity and things like that. That's a tough question, and I'll tell you where – do I think somebody should be able to be fired for being LGBT? No, I don't. Do I think that they have a right to sue in court for that? That is such a tough thing, and I'll tell you why I think it is. And I think opponents on the other side are sort of scared of the boy that cried wolf, right? That, oh, you know, it's a nebulous thing. I mean, how can you really prove one thing or another? How can you prove that somebody was sued for gender identity, especially – and I don't want to – I know opponents would say this, but it's not an immutable characteristic, gender identity. Mm-hmm. It changes. It is something that changes. So that's sort of where I come from on it. The bathroom bill, I pretty much support that in its entirety, the bathroom portion.
Terrific. Great start to the conversation. You're listening to I'll Grant You That. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Berkeley and Grant. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. I am Pierce Godwin, founder and president of Listen First Project, standing in for Berkeley Grimball as he's kind of on the other side of the microphone today, engaging in a Listen First conversation with Grant Fitzgerald. We're talking about LGBT rights and religious freedom. And Berkeley, should an individual be forced to participate in an activity that violates their sincerely held religious beliefs? How do you grapple with that?
And again, I think it's another very nuanced question. Obviously, if you can't ask somebody to do something that is totally against their moral conviction, but I mean, there's the balance of what's fair in society and compared to what is fair for this individual, and I think that's the whole gist of the whole conversation that we're trying to have here. I mean, the problem I have with it is there's supposed to be separation of church and state, right? There's not supposed to be a, you know, religion is not supposed to enter our legal system. Mm-hmm. is my understanding of it. And but then again, whose rights are being protected and whose rights are being trampled? I mean, do I get to have a right to be treated fairly as a gay person? And why does that infringe upon your rights to what? To be a religious person? And then the other question I always want to ask, and I probably can't ask you this one, Grant, but someone who was probably maybe more strongly, has strong feelings about it.
Go for it.
I don't ever remember Jesus saying a single thing about gay people. So, I mean, if you are a follower of Jesus and you're a Christian and Jesus says to love everybody, what's the problem? That is my core question to someone who is saying, well, you're violating my religious freedoms by asking me to serve another one of my fellow human beings by virtue of the fact that my interpretation of some biblical teaching in the Old Testament says that this is wrong.
Mm-hmm. And Grant, I know you're concerned about the religious freedom implications to these issues and that you've grown up in the church. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, so I can sort of address that. I mean, everything's in equilibrium, right? And in a democratic society, you can't make all sides completely happy, especially when there's strongly held beliefs, identities, sincerely held religious beliefs at stake. You can't make every side happy. So the goal is to find some sort of happy equilibrium where we can all coexist and get along together. The point about the Bible, right, and it does Jesus address it directly? I'm not a biblical scholar. I didn't go to seminary. But even if it wasn't addressed in, say, the gospel where all of Jesus's recorded teachings are, it is still in Romans. It's addressed throughout the Bible. In my opinion, it's pretty clear on it. Now, the Bible's also, like you said, pretty clear on things like loving your neighbor as yourself, treating others as you would like to be treated. And that way, I agree with you. I think that even if you're a Christian and you believe very strongly about gay marriage and things like that, that it shouldn't be in the church, that you can still have gay friends. You can still participate and, you know, not ostracize them and not discriminate against them in things like employment. Because ultimately, and this is something that is really occurring in the church right now, is how do you address this, right? How do you mix with this community that has felt disenfranchised by the church for so long, and so much of it is just loving them? And part of that, frankly, is, you know, letting them know where you stand on the gay marriage issue, but also letting them know, hey, that doesn't mean, you know, we can't be friends and we can't watch basketball together and we can't eat meals together. There are lots of things I do myself that my religion does not agree with. I'm not a perfect person, but, you know, that doesn't stop me from, being okay with myself and being friends that also aren't perfect.
Yeah, imagine that, associating with people that you don't agree with on everything. You know, Berkeley right. And I have talked about the study that he cited where folks don't even want their kids marrying someone of the opposite political party.
Right.
So I think that's a great point.
But there's so much fear and hatred around it. I mean, really, that's what it comes from. I mean, is that these are bad people. I think there's judgment, you know, usually
I would say that street goes both ways.
I will totally grant you that, absolutely. And I would certainly think if the church doesn't want to do something, the church should have the right. A church, we don't want to marry gay people, they should not have to marry gay people. If as a business person, I mean, the whole thing about, well, so the gay people can't get their cakes made by some—
Right, or the flower shop.
Come on, you can't find a gay florist. I'm sorry. I think it's not going to be too hard. Or a gay baker. You know, there's plenty of people out there who are happy to take the business. So I think if you want to make that decision, I really feel like as a business person, you know, you should have that right. If you work for the state— Sure. And your job is, you know, working for the state, and the state says this is the law, and you are, you know, and you need to, if you're a magistrate and your job is to marry people, then I think you either need to resign, find another job. I mean, if it goes against your moral beliefs to such a degree, like with the lady in Tennessee who got so much press.
Right.
So I don't even remember what happened, what finally happened with her, but...
With Kim Davis.
Kim Davis, yes, thank you.
Yeah, she was in jail for a period of time.
I think she resigned. I could be wrong about that. Crack research staff can look that up.
So I think a lot of that is kind of a tempest in a teapot, you know, as far as the ability of people to buy things from someone. I mean,
sure.
if you're a merchant and you're turning away business— Geez, I don't know. I mean, I'm a merchant, and, you know, to turn away business is really a hard thing to do. I mean, and I guess you've really got to not like gay people to not want to deal with them. But, I mean, if for some reason you think that, you know, this is what your religion tells you, I think that as a private owner of a business, you should be able to do that.
Well, in those cases, too, it's a little bit more nuanced than that they just don't like gay people, and so they will not, you know— do floral arrangements for them or bake a cake for them. In those specific instances that are sort of in the news, it was cases where they didn't agree with the actual marriage, the actual act. And so in one case, the baker had known this couple for a long time and had done lots of cakes, had made them lots of things, but she just said, I can't do it for a marriage. You know, I would argue that is different. Then, some people would say it's not different.
But you can't, of course, do that if you can't discriminate. So what we're saying is you can discriminate on that basis, but you can't discriminate because of race or sex. It's against the law.
Yes, but there is nothing in their religious belief in the Bible that specifically forbids interracial marriage or what was the other thing?
Well, I mean, there's nothing that says
based on our place in the Bible, it says
women are second-class citizens, but you know, we've gotten beyond that.
There are instances, sure.
Terrific conversation. Thanks so much, guys. We're going to take another short break. I'll grant you that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. This is Pierce Godwin, founder and president of Listen First Project, standing in for Berkeley Grimble, who is joining us today in a Listen First conversation with Grant Fitzgerald on LGBT issues and religious freedom and the intersection and tension between the two.
Yeah, let's talk a little about HB2, and because I have a very good acquaintance, and she, when I met her, she was a he, and she has for the last 18 or 19 years been a she. She pretty much looks exactly like a woman, and everything about her is feminine. And so it just seems sort of grossly unfair to ask this person who has had the full operation and, you know, has changed her gender to start having to go into a male bathroom. I mean, this is a person who looks like a woman, a person who has had, you know, augmentation in certain places, and so it's fairly obvious that this is a feminine person you're looking at. So, I mean, why is it so wrong that she should be able to go into the ladies' bathroom?
Well, my understanding of the law is actually that if somebody undergoes a sex change operation and they are legally have changed their sex, that they will be able to use that bathroom that is.
But that's not on their
sex.
Birth certificate.
Right, only if they have gone that step to change their sex on the birth certificate.
Okay, so it is changed on the birth certificate as well.
Which
okay.
I don't think is everybody does. I don't think, well, first, why would you do that? I mean, I don't know if there's any.
Well, and I think
driver's license, perhaps. But.
I think the reason they put that provision in place is that the original provision was, and I'm arguing my side, of course, but is that the law was written so broadly as to say that there's no way to say, right? So the issue is that they're saying that a boy could go into a girl's bathroom, and it could be somebody who's not a transsexual or has had any sort of gender identity change or anything like that, and that they could just go into a bathroom like a peeping Tom and, you know, be in a girl's bathroom. And so they wanted – it was written very unclear, right? And so they wanted it to be cleared up. And so that's why they put into place the hard measure of, well, it has to be changed on your birth certificate, where you can't just say, hey, my name's Grant, and this is my identity.
Or, yeah, you can't just walk in there and say, hi, my name is Sue, and
right.
I want to be in here.
Right. Now
– seems unlikely, but
– I've heard the counter argument that maybe they went too far, right, from the other side. And I don't think anybody from the other side – you know, nobody from the side opposite of me thinks that, you know, sexual predators should be able to go into bathrooms either. Right, but what the goal is to write a very narrowly defined law where it's not open to interpretation.
And most sexual predators are generally looking at the same sex. I mean, it's as you think of historically, you know, well, generally you think of sexual predators as being male on male.
Sure.
I mean, I think that's where the issue usually is.
That could be true. I don't have statistics in front of me, but it doesn't take away from the fact that the law is written in such a way that it would make it possible.
True.
And so I think that's what they want, is that they want it more narrowly defined. I think an issue now is, you know, and I saw Governor McCrory yesterday on Meet the Press, and he kind of talked about this, is, you know, did the city go too far?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the big thing about this incident, as they treat it as almost like it just happened, right? I mean, the city of Charlotte has been working on this specific thing for years, more than a year. And so it wasn't like it just happened. And the state of North Carolina, the legislature said, hey, if you pass this thing, we are probably going to call a special session and write a bill.
Right.
But it's just nobody saw that bill until it actually came out.
The rest of the state knew about it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been on their radar. So.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. Tremendous conversation, guys. I wish we had more time. It's such a complex issue, whether it is the recent headline-grabbing HB2 issue in North Carolina or the Supreme Court last year. A lot more to talk about, and I hope we can do it again sometime. But that is all the time we have for today. If you want to learn anything more about Listen First Project, visit listenfirstproject.org. Check out Listen First essays by Berkeley and others on this and many other issues. But that's all the time for today. Thank you so much for listening to I'll Grant You That.